This is episode 108 of the Photo Biz Exposed podcast. And today, our special guest is freelance designer, developer, and blogger, Alex Vita. And he's going to be sharing how to build a photography website that converts visitors to clients. That interview coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast track your success. Welcome to the Photo Biz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. Today, it's going to get a little technical when Alex, but I know that the things he shares in today's interview will change the way you look at your website. And I'm pretty sure you'll be heading straight over to make some changes to what you're actually saying on your website, what you're going to get back off your website, and how you're going to make it so much better in regard to converting visitors to clients, which is exactly what we want our websites to do. As this episode goes live, I'll be sitting at Sydney International Airport, about to head over to New Zealand to a Jonas Peterson workshop with a bunch of other photographers. I'm super excited for that. So I'm going to cut things short and get stuck into the episode.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In the last episode, we had Peter Eastway, the accountant and photographer, and Sam Stroud, photographer and businessman, or maybe businessman first and then photographer. I'm not quite sure with Sam, but I think there were some definite similarities between both guys. Both are definitely focused on the business side of things. Although they have a love of photography, they've made that decision to make photography a business. And for that reason, they treat it as a business. They focus on the numbers. And if things aren't adding up, they'll either make changes or they'll stop doing it. So I love both parts of the interview or both parts of the episode for different reasons. Peter is just so cut and dry, isn't he, with his information. He is an accountant after all, but what he says makes so much sense. And on the other hand, I love what Sam says. Do what you love, but follow the money. I think if you missed that episode, you definitely need to get back and have a listen because it will change the way you look at the numbers in your business. And I think they both make it clear that you can love and enjoy what you're doing in regard to your photography and still make a great living out of it if you just look at the numbers.
Photo Biz Exposed. Interviews with photographers to help you build a better photography business.
If you're listening to the free podcast episode, then you will be missing about half of the interview with Alex today. I have saved that for premium members, and there is some really cool stuff in there. Now, if you're 100% happy with your website, if it is converting, you know that people are coming to your website, they're loving what they see, and the phone is ringing because of your content, then you know what, you probably don't need to hear what Alex has to say. If, however, you've got a website that you're not sure about, or the phone just isn't ringing enough, or you aren't hearing comments about your website, or people aren't using your contact page, or they don't really know much about you when they make that first phone call, there's a lot of things that Alex shares in the second half that can change that for you. So if you want to get that information, become a premium member. It's $20 a month. You do get access to the full back catalog, plus you get to hear the full interviews every single week.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is Alex Vita from Romania. Alex is a freelance designer, developer, blogger, and the creator of Foreground Web. It's a website dedicated to improving photography websites. Alex has a degree in computer science, but he says he's mostly self-taught. And he started out with photography years ago, and he went through the struggles of finding work. He shot a few weddings, had a portrait studio, and learned to build photography websites through trial and error. Since then, he's been working with photographers that are starting out, full-time pros, and large agencies. It's a pleasure to welcome him into the podcast. Alex, welcome.
Hello, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me on.
Mate, it's an absolute pleasure. How is life in Romania? I've never spoken to someone from Romania on the podcast.
Well, it's just like everywhere else. I'm working only with photographers from the US and the UK and other countries, so I don't often work with local photographers. So I'm living in a bubble.
Yeah, right. So you're working from a big city or just a small town?
Well, from Bucharest, which is the capital, so it's the larger city.
Okay. And is photography like a big thing in Romania like it is in the States and Australia and other English-speaking countries?
Well, I think it's pretty big, yeah. There are all sorts of photographers here. Wedding photography is big, obviously, but I know a few top architecture photographers, a few fine art ones. So, yeah, it's pretty big, yeah.
Sure. And Foreground Web, so this is your website dedicated to improving photography websites. What got you started down this track?
Well, I've worked as a freelance developer, and I've now worked with almost 200 photographers from 20 different countries, but I decided to rebrand myself and my work into this site called Foreground Web. The choice for the word foreground is, well, it's a photographic term, and it means that what you post online on your website represents the foreground of your actual work. Your hard work, all your editing and shooting is in the background, but photo buyers and everything, that's the foreground for them. And it's just my site to teach photographers how to showcase their work professionally on the web and to realize that the website can be much more. It can be a marketing engine for their business, not just a simple portfolio piece. And that's what I do, and I try to write long-form articles about that. That's it, basically.
Okay, so where is your income coming from now?
Well, most of my income is from client work. I work with photographers. They get in touch if they need a website redesign or small tweaks here and there on their website, and that's what I do, basically. And I'm just looking to maybe expand in the near future, hire a team of developers that I can supervise and help photographers that way. And in the meantime, I'm just growing my website and my blog and trying to get it to as many photographers as I can.
Sure. I want to talk more about your blog in just a little while, because every heading, every blog post title I look at, I think, wow, I want to talk about that and that and that. So they're great titles, and it looks like there's some great info there, which we'll talk about. Before we start talking about building a new website, maybe we can talk a little bit, or you can share some of your experiences in regard to what you see that photographers are doing wrong with their websites.
Okay, well, the first thing that I want to start with is having contact information easily accessible. That's the main thing that bothers me. And there was a post doing the rounds on the internet a while ago. It was called something like 30 most influential photographers or something like that. And it was just sorting out photographers by social media followers. And if you look at their websites, many of them just didn't have an about page. They didn't have a contact page. There was a top photographer who just had his email hidden after the 10th paragraph or something on his about page. How was I supposed to contact him if I needed to? So this is kind of the most important mistake I see photographers do.
So where should we have our contact information? On every page, or just easily read or easily found on the contact page?
Well, if it's possible, on both. So both on the contact page and in the footer. But I can imagine that for some website layouts, that's not possible, especially with wedding photographers who sometimes like to have full screen homepages, full width images and things like that. There's no footer there. But if it's possible, yeah, an email address at least should be present everywhere and on the contact pages especially. And it should also be turned into a link. So if people want to just click on it and write in their preferred email client, that should be an option too. They shouldn't have to copy paste, or the email shouldn't be an image and things like that.
Okay. I've seen some photographers, instead of having their actual email address or a link, they'll write the word at and things like that, so it reduces the amount of spam they get. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, there are other... they're called email obfuscation techniques. Yeah, so spammers can't detect email addresses and then start sending spam. There are other good techniques to avoid that without making gimbals look ugly like that. Photographers can Google such techniques and they'll surely find something. But yeah, well, you get the idea. When a visitor comes to the site, they have to then type in the email address to send them an email instead of being able to just click or copy paste. But let's just say it's not that big of a problem.
Yeah, sure. So really you're saying, sounds like common sense, just make it as easy as possible for any potential client to get in touch with you.
Exactly. There was a great book in the web design industry from someone called Steve Krug or something like that. I'm sorry for misspelling his name. And it was called Don't Make Me Think. And that's what web designers usually have to do. They should make things as easy as possible to avoid any friction in the browsing experience of the users.
Okay, so don't think of like tricky names for titles in your menu bar and things like that. Just make it simple.
Yeah, exactly. That's another thing. Photographers tend to sometimes get too creative when naming their menu items. And instead of contact, they say get in touch or some other stuff. And for the about page, they say meet John, or I guess it's the same thing, but it's not intuitive. That extra 2 or 3 seconds that a visitor takes to figure out how to navigate the site, that sometimes makes all the difference in the world. And they should just stick to the familiar terms, because that's the easiest to use, yeah.
Mm-hmm, sure. And just one more thing with the contact page. Do you think it's a good idea to still have the form on the contact page, you know, like enter your name, email address, and then your comments? Do you need to have that, or should we just have a clickable link for email?
Well, I recommend having both, because some people don't want to use their own email client to send an email. Maybe they're afraid their inbox is full and they don't want to see it. But sometimes they do just prefer leaving a quick message on the website directly. With that in mind, the contact form should be as simple as possible. Just the name and the message would be the minimum, and maybe a subject. That's another mistake I see, because some photographers tend to have a huge contact form, 5 or 10 fields. They start to ask for the phone number, for the date of the wedding, for the number of people at the wedding, and other details like that. And it just reduces the number of messages they get. And there was some research in this, and just asking for the phone number prevents about 5 or 10% of the visitors from leaving a message, and you don't want that. You just want to get the conversation started, so make it as easy as possible for photographers to leave a message, and then you'll follow up via email and ask for any other information you want from them.
Okay, so what about if we want to have those fields like wedding date or, you know, some extra information, phone number? What about if you had those and they weren't a requirement to send the message? Would that be okay, or you just want to eliminate them altogether?
Well, those would be okay, yeah. But obviously don't make them a required field. But if visitors on the contact page are targeted clients who do want to hire you for something, then yeah, you can ask those fields to get more info right off the bat, yeah. But just don't make them required fields, because yeah, it doesn't make sense. I once tried to contact a wedding photographer just to give a comment about his website, and I had to choose a wedding date. Why?
I do that regularly, because when I'm trying to set up these interviews, often they're with wedding photographers, and that's one of the required fields.
Yeah.
I usually just put Christmas Day, because I'm pretty sure they won't be booked.
Yeah, so even if you're not looking for a client or things like that, people still need to be able to contact you for recommendations, for problems, for various requests, or just for fun. So, yeah, other than the email and the message, don't make them required, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Any other big things that you see on websites, on photographers' websites, particularly that we should be looking out for?
Well, photographers don't tend to not focus too much on their about page, which I think is kind of a mistake, because it's sometimes the second most visited page on a website, besides the homepage, obviously. And especially for wedding or portrait photographers, every bride or groom or client out there surely visits the about page to learn more about the photographer and to get a sense of his personality. And photographers tend to ignore that page and make it really shallow, and they don't post a self-portrait, which is a big one. I don't know why. Well, there are reasons, obviously, but a self-portrait makes the site more trustworthy because people can relate to you and see who you are. And the text should also make people trust you. You should not just simply write about your history, when you started photography, and what gear you use, because everybody can do that. You should write about what makes you unique, why you're doing what you're doing, what motivates you, how you can solve your clients' problems, if you're obviously selling any services or products. Yeah, so you get the idea. The About page is a great page to convince clients about the quality of your work, and I just don't see photographers doing that too often.
Mm-hmm. So having the self-portrait, that's one of the biggest things. And then with the text that you just talked about there, can you have too much text on the About page, or is it the more the better?
Well, no, you cannot definitely have too much. And that's why you should try to keep it as short as possible, because you can't really expect photographers to sit and read through pages and pages of content there. You don't want to put the kitchen sink there. And top photographers usually do that. You're basically saying more by saying less. You just want to give small glimpses into your life and your work that can appeal to the target audience, but that's about it. It's not an autobiography there.
I've read some of those.
Another reason is photographers tend to write for search engines just for them, but they should instead write for humans, not for search engines. Because if you have that, I don't know how to say it, plastic text, just full stuffed with keywords there, so that maybe you can rank higher for certain keywords, you're alienating your audience, because it's just doesn't sound human. It doesn't sound personable.
Okay. So, all right. I'm glad you brought up SEO, because this is one thing. So one of the things that we always get encouraged to do, and we have on the past with other guests on the show, is to use plugins like SEO by Yoast. And you know, when you're using that plugin, say on a WordPress site, it says, I mean, you don't get a green light unless you have a keyword in the title, if you use that keyword in the page URL, if you don't use that keyword phrase in the first paragraph. Yeah. I mean, should we be doing all that, or should we be ignoring the green light we're getting from the plugin?
Well, most of the time you're safe to ignore it, because that to me is overdoing it. The plugin just tries to, well, it's more geared towards SEO copywriters and other types of businesses. With photography websites, it's safer to just focus more on humans. And for example, when writing the SEO title and meta description, right, which you know show up in Google search results, your main focus there should not be to use certain keywords to rank higher. It should be to convince users seeing the search results to click on your site. So you should write for people seeing those search results, not for search engines in particular.
Okay, so just for the listener that's not exactly sure what you're talking about here, can you just describe what that meta description is and where the listener could fill that out for their blog post or their page?
Okay, well, if they're using WordPress and they're using an SEO plugin like WordPress SEO by Yoast or All-in-One SEO, all of those allow you to define an SEO title and meta description for each post. So when you're editing the post inside WordPress, inside the visual editor, you have some new custom fields there. Those are not visible on the page. They're just in the source code. And those end up in Google search results when someone searches for your name or certain keywords. They can obviously Google anything right now and see what I'm talking about. And the idea is to not force keywords too much into those fields and instead try to appeal to humans to get their clicks in search results.
Okay, so if the listener doesn't fill in those fields on that plugin, then Google will automatically just take the title that you've used for the blog post and plus the first few hundred, I guess, letters from your blog post.
Well, yeah, for the title, it will try to take the headline of the page or the title, yeah. And for the description, not necessarily the first few words, but it will choose words from throughout the page depending on the search query.
Okay. All right. So that's pretty smart.
Yeah. Actually, some websites intentionally don't fill in their meta description so Google can choose its own relevant words from the page. This is sometimes a good strategy as well. It depends on how good of a writer you are.
Okay. Can you give me a bit more of a tip here? Like, what would you recommend we do?
Well, if a page has one single topic, if, for example, it's a gallery for portraits of a couple, for example, well, you can write your description there because you know what page is all about and it has one single focus. But if you have a page about multiple topics, like your rates, your prices, or, I don't know, listing multiple types of services you offer, then it might make sense sometimes to not fill in the meta description. And whenever someone searches for certain keywords matching your services, Google will just display that particular snippet in search results. So it might be better. So as a rule of thumb, if the page has one single main topic, it's okay to write it. If it has multiple, then maybe it's better off to let Google do it.
Okay, all right. I've got no idea to the answer of this next question, but let's say the listener is totally lost with what we just covered. Can they get in contact with you and can they hire you or pay you a fee to check their website and say, right, should I be putting in my metadata here or can you recommend I use a plugin for this? Do you do that sort of work?
Yeah, absolutely. We also do full SEO reviews for websites, and I just basically take a close look at the entire website and the source code and other SEO tools to see how they're using headlines, how they're writing their meta descriptions, and other recommendations like how they should display image captions and keywords on pages and whatever something feels unnatural. So yeah, we do have that service and they can just get in touch and I'll give them a free quote and everything. And we also test the website in various tools, including Google's own tools, because they can detect crawling errors. So if Google has a problem indexing your entire site for some reason, we're able to detect that, yeah.
Nice. Okay, that's cool. All right, so I don't want to get too bogged down in getting too technical, but I know there's a lot of discussion out there, and I'm a big advocate for WordPress websites because that's what I use. I hear people throwing around things like Wix or Squarespace or even HTML sites. What do you suggest, and is there any reason why?
Well, yeah, there is a big trend towards using such tools, and I can obviously see why, and it is a good idea. First of all, you mentioned WordPress, which is the most popular platform out there. I think it powers 5% of the entire internet, and so it's that huge. And basically, in the past, people used to rely on other image management tools for their galleries and for selling images, but now WordPress and Squarespace and other similar software tools have just caught up so much, and they have plugins and extensions and all of that, that it's become a really powerful tool. And in fact, 2 or 3 days ago, I was talking to a top photographer. I won't name him, but he just said that, and I have his quote in front of me. He said he feels like a lot of commercial photographers are looking for hybrid solutions all in one site, a place where they can blog and showcase their commercial or editorial content, a place where they can sell photos and download if they want to. So the days of having separate photography websites and blog sites are done. And that's what I see basically. Tools are becoming so powerful that they kind of merge the two, blogging and image proofing and selling capabilities. And I think that will be the future. And the resources you mentioned are kind of a proof of that. WordPress is huge and it has plugins like Next Gen Galleries, which now has e-commerce functionality, so photographers can sell their images. There is WooCommerce, which is the leading e-commerce plugin for WordPress, now has a whole new photography extension just for that. Squarespace also is great for photographers. So, yeah, I do see that trend, yeah.
So, okay, how should a photographer that's looking at redoing their website or, you know, starting a brand new website, how do they decide? Should they just pick something they like and just rest with that? Or should they be, you know, jumping onto forums and getting everyone's opinions? How do you choose?
Well, a combination of both. They can't just choose based on form and on design because that won't get them anywhere. Sure, they'll have a pretty website, but in terms of functionality, it needs to match what their goals are. So if they're into blogging and they know they'll need a blog, I think WordPress is the best solution and the best bet for them because it's so extensible and there are hundreds, thousands of great WordPress themes out there these days, all responsive, so they work well on mobile devices and all with different types of layouts and galleries and portfolios and slideshows and video backgrounds and everything you can want, basically. So that would be the safe bet to go with WordPress.
Okay. So if someone comes to you and they want to hire you to build them a brand new website, what are some of the things that they would need to think about before you even start work? What are some of the things that you discuss?
Well, that's a great question because, well, sometimes I'm getting these funny emails from clients. I got an email a week ago and the photographer asked, "Hi, can you adjust my photography website? Thanks." And that was the entire email. So, and I emailed him back saying that, okay, I'd like to help explore what you're after and give you a quote and everything. And he just emailed me back and say, "Well, okay, can you tell me the cost? Thanks." And that's it. This is obviously a huge red flag because I don't even know what his existing website is, let alone have any idea. And this brings us to kind of the mindset that photographers have because they're just focused on the cost. And obviously, that's important in our economy today, but they don't see websites as an investment because there is a resistance there to hire somebody. Well, photographers are advocating hiring pro photographers for those kinds of works, but they're not into hiring other experts from other industries to help them.
That's so true.
Yeah, well, why is that? Because a website is an investment. It can really drive your business forward. So why not consider it an investment, something that can bring you closer to your goals in the future? So when I get new clients, well, we usually just start a conversation about their website. I ask them to describe their projects in a few words to see if they have any, first of all, if they have any specific content they'd like to use or if they already have a visual identity established, a logo and things like that, or is it something that we need to build from scratch? And then I need to get a sense from them about what type of photography they do, what services they offer, what is their existing audience, their target audience, because that shapes the new website greatly. Things like how they imagine photographers using the website for and what are their objectives with the site, that shapes up the website in different ways. So that's what I have a conversation with them before starting a project to both see if we're a good fit to work together and to gather ideas about the new website.
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
Alex, it's been a real pleasure chatting to you and I've learned a lot of good stuff here too. Where is the best place for the listener to check out more of what you do and maybe get in touch as well and see exactly what you offer and pricing?
Well, that's simple. They can just go to foregroundweb.com and that's where they can see the blog which has tons of articles, and they can see the contact page to get in touch if they have a message. I'm open to any questions from photographers. I offer free quotes and advice, so please get in touch if you have any questions. Yeah.
Fantastic. And you've got an ebook as well.
Yeah, I've written an ebook on photography website mistakes, and I've done a lot of research for it, listing all the mistakes photographers are doing on their websites, including technical and more overall strategy mistakes. And they can check it out. It has links to solutions and examples from photographers. And I offer that on my website. If they subscribe to the blog, they'll get it for free automatically.
Fantastic. And what were you going to say? You also can be found somewhere else?
Well, I'm just on Twitter. That's @foreground.
Okay. And just before I let you go, and I'll add links to anything that you mentioned there, Alex, but I just noticed on your blog page, you've got a post there on email signatures.
Yeah.
This is something that I just had done for myself after I received an email from one of my listeners, and it's been fantastic. I've loved it.
Yeah, it's a great promotion tool for your website. You're sending emails a lot these days, so why not bring people back to your site?
Yeah. And I added a photo of myself on there, and like you just said, a couple of links as well, and contact details. And I think the fact that just having the photo on there has been one of the best things.
Yeah, because when you talk to someone, you like to see who you're speaking with. They can relate to you. So it's the same thing as the about page that we talked about.
Cool. Is this something that you build as well for clients?
Yeah, I've done that for some photographers too. I have to custom code that signature and then import it into their email client.
Okay, so you can do that.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Mate, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for giving up your time and for sharing what you have. It's been wonderful.
No problem. Thanks. And hope your listeners got something out of it.
I'm sure they did. Alrighty, first up, a big thanks to Alex for coming on the show. Alex, if you're listening, it was awesome to have you share as much as you did today. I know that English isn't your first language, but you made perfect sense. And some of the things that you taught us today are going to make a massive difference. So again, thank you so much. For you, the listener, one thing you should definitely do is get over to Alex's website at foregroundweb.com and join his mailing list. Get hold of the ebook that we talked about at the end of the interview. It is not only beautifully laid out and designed, the information is fantastic. It's easy to follow, easy to implement, and Alex doesn't bombard you with emails and salesy things every single week. It's all great stuff that I've received since signing up. Now, if you are a premium member, you'll be able to download the ebook directly from the premium membership area. Alex has kindly made that available to you from the photobizx.com website. Now, speaking of the website, you will find links to anything and everything that Alex talked about in today's show, including a link to the book, Don't Make Me Think, A Common Sense Approach to Web Usability. Now, the show notes you'll find for today are at photobizx.com/108. And while you're there, if you're checking out the links, I'd love it if you could leave a comment following today's episode. Is there something that Alex said or shared that you're going to be implementing on your website? Are you going to be adding something or taking something off, making some changes to the text, reducing the amount of text, or adding more? Or did you hear Alex say something and think, oh my goodness, I do exactly that on my website. I've got to change that. I think music is probably one of the biggest things that you should definitely have turned off when a visitor comes to your website. But there was a bunch of things that Alex talked about. So yeah, I'd love to hear your comments, your feedback. And if you just want to say thanks to Alex for coming on the show, then by all means, use the comments section there. If you have a follow-up question, it could be something technical or even something a little bit more general, leave them there for Alex and I'll be sure to let him know to come back and answer them for you. You know, every week I get a little email that's automatically generated from an app I have that let me know of any iTunes reviews that pop up. And I do make a big deal about these iTunes reviews every single week. And if you're a regular listener, you will know that it is the reviews that help people find the podcast. And they also let me know that I'm on the right track and that I'm putting out good content, putting out content that actually makes a difference that you want to hear.
It's shout out time.
So this week I did receive one review. It's a really short, sweet, simple review from Dawn Thompson of Dawn Thompson Photography in New Zealand. And here's what Dawn says. Thanks, Andrew. Honest, inspiring and refreshing. Dan's portrait work is amazing. Now, the reference to Dan is obviously to Dan Cripps from episode 105, the Tasmanian photographer who left his successful partnership to start up again, and he's just pretty much doing what he wants to do now. So a really cool interview. He has amazing work, and a great episode that was. But one thing I really want to be clear about is Dawn's great rating and review. Although it was only one sentence, or two technically, that review has as much effect and helps the show as much as a longer review. So even if you have a minute and you haven't left a review, something short and sweet like Dawn's is absolutely fantastic and goes a long way to helping the show rank higher in iTunes and to help new listeners find the show. And that's what it's all about. If we can work together to increase the number of listeners to the show, it makes it easier for me to attract bigger and better and more interview guests each week. So Dawn, again, thank you so much for taking the time to leave your review. It was short and sweet, but it was absolutely perfect. So thanks. Okay, that's going to wrap things up for this episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and I hope your week is looking as good as mine. I'm about to jump on this plane, head over to New Zealand, looking forward to the workshop on Tuesday with Jonas and a bunch of other like-minded photographers. I'm also looking forward to meeting Anais Chain, a listener to the podcast. You may have heard Anais's name in the past if you're a long-term listener. Anais is a French photographer living in New Zealand, heard that I was going to be heading over there and has offered to take a few of us that are staying together in the same house around to see the sights of Auckland for a day. So I'm really looking forward to that, and then racing back here later in the week to shoot a couple of weddings on the weekend. All right, hope you have an awesome week. If you want to get in touch, if you've got a suggestion for the show, if there's a particular guest that you'd love to hear, then by all means, let me know. You can email me. It's andrew@photobizx.com. And I love getting your suggestions, hearing your feedback, and even just putting a name to a listener stat. It's all very cool. And lastly, I just want to say a big thanks to all the brand new premium members that have come on in the last couple of weeks. It's great to have you on board, and I know you're going to love the extra content, and I'm looking forward to getting to know you as well. All right, have an awesome week, and I'll chat to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.